Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, mystery, from an episode of True Detective Mysteries from 1950 later. But first, it's Broadway Is My Beat, with a story called The Rocking Man, heard on CBS on March 7th, 1953.
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
March and the young winds of spring begin their reconnaissance of Broadway. The probing action for places to set up shop. Pushcart of the flower vendor, for instance, whose numbed fingers wrap clusters of frost-burned buds in yesterday's newspaper, February's newspaper. And in stray of silken hair sighed across a child's winter-worn face and rippled through fur held close to a woman's throat and her tentative gesture of unclasping it. And somewhere in city, a small monkey dances, strains at a leash, hands a battered hat to an organ grinder, grins. So get with it. The spring dance is just around the corner. Early afternoon of March, on corridor of a rooming house where winter holds, and to a room, the man staring into wall, hands clenched white on a rocking chair. Man in year-long winter room, rocking, staring, silent, and the detective who speaks for him.
Just like that, Danny. Man hasn't stopped. I've been here 20 minutes now, and he hasn't stopped. I try to get through to him. Nothing. He just rocks. I've been told it's all night now and this morning.
Who told you, Danson?
Landlady. It's driving her out of her mind the way he is. The creak the rocker makes through her sleep. She called in, said, get him out of here. I'm going out of my mind, she said.
Who is he?
She said he was Harry Carson. Rented this room for years. Never had trouble before with him, she said. A sick man. A lost man. That's big trouble, huh, Danny?
Mr. Carson, what is it? What's wrong? Mr. Carson?
Me too. I tried the magic words. Mr. Carson don't care. Mr. Carson don't talk. This he had, though.
Hmm?
This .38 caliber revolver that was shoved in his belt. He didn't bat an eye when I reached over and took it away from him. Here, take a look. Have a smell.
It's been fired.
It's been fired. Found a couple other things while me and Mr. Carson tried to chat. Didn't have what else to do.
You found what?
Not much. A couple of snapshots. This one of Mr. Carson with a kid, the boy. Look, western-type scenery in the background. The fence they're leaning against, like from a ranch. Carson looks younger, happier, huh, Danny?
And the other one you got?
Another pose of Carson, older. This time with his arm around a young fella. Happens I know this young fella, Danny.
You got around.
Yeah, I do. About a year ago, ran into this young fellow in the courts a couple of times. Eager lawyer type. Robert, call me Bob fella, Carson. Eager, bright boy. Caught the eyes of corporation fellas, I hear. Boy on his way up. And this man, Harry Carson.
Mr. Carson, you want to tell us what about the gun? About the boy? Better get him to the doctor.
Yeah. It'll be something I can do for him.
And whir of street noise from outside and two stories below intrudes into the room and finds a place in the scatter and clutter of small despairs. And the focus of it, the man in the rocker, the man with a secret hugged close, old man, a strong face and sorrows, strong hands and knowledge locked away, and shuffling steps, and Dennison helps him to his feet and takes him away. Old man of secret and shock. Work to do. Consult a phone book. Address of lawyer, Robert, in parentheses, Bob Carson. Squad car ride through afternoon city to park. And this, nod from livery doorman as he opens a polished brass door with a fist wrapped in a green gauntlet. Pencil directions to Mr. Carson's apartment on floor 12. Elevator ride surrounded by just audible and oiled silences. And carved carpet walk through expensively shadowed corridors.
Yes? Mr. Carson?
Yes. The desk phoned and said a Mr. Clover, a police officer, was on his way up.
That's right.
Please come in. I'll take your coat. Oh,
that's all right. I'll just be a minute.
If my wife were here, she'd fix us up something. She's kind of a wizard.
It's about Harry Carson.
About my father?
We found him in his room, Mr. Carson. He'd been sitting for a day or so.
My father?
He had a gun tucked in his belt. It had been fired. He refuses to talk about it.
What's the matter with him? He gone crazy or something? Senile or something?
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Carson.
Where is he now?
It's under medical care.
Police physician? Listen, I'll get him all the care.
That has to do with the question. How come your father lives in such a squalid room and you...
And I'm a real terrible son, huh? Big man on his way up and don't appreciate dear old Dad. Forgot all about the sacrifices of the parents. That drivel.
That's the answer?
I take care of my father, Mr. Clover. I send him $150 a week each week of the year. He does with it what he likes. And the fact that he doesn't live here with us is testimony to my wife's good judgment. The in-law problem. Don't let it start and it won't happen. A gun stuck in his belt? What for?
Do you know?
Figure an old man. How do I know? You at police hospital?
That's right.
You going back that way? I'll leave my wife a note. You can give me a lift. Why don't you turn on the light, Danny? Night's beginning to happen outside. You mind I do it?
No, I don't mind.
I think I got some things for you.
Hmm?
Yeah, I made a rundown on the banks. No account credited to Harry Carson. How is he, Danny?
Dr. Sinsky called in a little while ago. Carson just stares. He hasn't changed. Go on.
$100.50 a week from his son, Call Me Bob, and living in a room that's maybe $8 a week and all the rocking chair you can handle and all the nothing. $100.50 a week free, no strings, and to live like that. Where does it go, all that money, I asked myself. So?
All right, so?
I walked Carson's neighborhood. I came up with an answer. And a reason, maybe. You want to meet him?
What are you talking about?
He's waiting outside in the hall. I'll get him.
Litchfield? Yeah, you. Come on in. In here.
Mr. Litchfield, Danny. Runs a small grocery down the street from where Carson lives. Danny Clover, Mr. Litchfield.
Look, fellas... This is the best time in my store this time of day. I shouldn't have come with you. I should be there, not here.
Yeah, we understand, Mr. Litchfield. Just tell the lieutenant what you know about Harry Carson, and then you can go back.
Well, what's with Harry? He done something? He steal? He rob? This man here comes into my place, asks questions, says Harry Carson...
What do you know about him, Mr. Litchfield?
What do I need to know about a man who trades in my place? I already told this man
here... Now, tell the lieutenant, too, Mr. Litchfield.
Now, like I told this man here, once a week, Monday noon, on the dot... Carson comes into my place. He hands me a check for $150 from his boy. I cash it for him. Keep 25 out. Give him back the 100 and a quarter and change.
Well, 25 you keep. And for what, Mr. Litchfield?
For groceries, staples, canned goods, beer, fruit. Uh-huh. Things to keep a lonely old man alive for a week. For Harry Carson, it comes to 25 a week on the dot. In advance. Never runs over, never is less. It's the arrangement we made, Mr. Carson and me, a long time ago. And also on the dot, the other thing I told this man.
I'd like to know, too, Mr. Litchfield.
Like this. I get the 25 from Mr. Carson. Give him back his change. 125 to the dot. He walks out of my place to the corner. Hands over the change to a fella waiting there.
What fella?
Who knows? A fella. Every week I notice this. First time by accident I see it, then I make a point to see it. And every week, Mr. Carson, the walk to the corner, the handing over of all that money to a fella.
Yes?
Tartaglia, Danny, and a good evening to you. Also, a man just brought in to downstairs.
I'm busy, Gino.
Man shot with a .38 caliber revolver, Danny, dead on arrival. In a vacant lot a block away from the rooming house of Harry Carson, behind the billboard. John Doe now in the morgue, Danny. I thought
Thanks,
you...
Gino. Dennison.
Yeah.
Get Carson. Bring him downstairs. Mr. Litchfield...
Listen, fellas, I gave you all this time.
We'll need a little more. Let's go, Mr. Litchfield. Downstairs now to the realm of the echo. Corridor that sweats tears. Follow blue arrow painted on floor and turn right. Avenue to the morgue. And the man beside you, grocer, suddenly turned chain smoker. Wait with him briefly. For the other footsteps, the other men. Detective Dennison, the man he leads.
This way, Mr. Carson.
Okay, Danny. Hello, Mr. Carson.
Has he said anything to anybody yet?
Nope. Not a word. Not even to his son.
Let's go in. Mr. Litchfield...
I'm okay.
I just want you to look at this man and tell
Let's
me...
Let's get it over, huh? Yeah, that's him. That's the man who stands on the corner waiting.
George?
For... Wait a minute.
George?
Danny, shut up.
George? Death is very becoming to you, George. Yes.
When the enormous night finds Broadway and takes it over, the sound is a thing compounded of machine and hiss and the gaudy laugh, and in between, the clack of footsteps, dark whispers, and the silent screams a heart makes. And when the month is March and the rains of beginning spring fall softly, night is partitioned, crowd huddled tightly behind this facade or that, in this doorway, behind that window. So make a phone call, find a friend. The crowd is lonely. And above it, office at headquarters, night through tracery of rain on windowpane, night caught in droplets of color that slip over glass and coalesce. Watch it, be lulled by it. And the explosion is named Sergeant Gino Tartaglia.
I warn you, Danny, never marry a Rigolini.
What?
Mrs. Tartaglia, a Rigolini by birth, and ask me about
them. What's the matter, Gino? An argument with Mrs. T?
Children of the soil, that's all they are. The whole family. Comes March and rain. Go buy seeds for the flower box. This hour, I got to stop and find a place that sells seeds.
Gino.
Every year she plants with hand, hoe, and trowel. Nothing ever grows. Each year in June, I got to sneak marigolds into the flower box to make her think she's a green thumb like the rest of the Rigolini.
You got something for me, Gino?
Yeah. Don't marry...
Besides that.
Oh. Medical report on the deceased identified as George Harvey. Dead on arrival approximately 36 hours.
Go on.
He lived in a nicely furnished apartment on West 38, but he is from Allen Springs originally.
Where?
This is a surmise we must make. Do
Allen Springs?
The one in Churchill County, Nevada, not the Allen Springs near Allentown.
Go on, Gino.
Newspapers in his room, the local Gazette. A bill of sale from a piece of property there, sold last year. Also, various knickknacks as befits the room of those west of the Great Divide.
Okay.
Also, initial questioning of his apartment manager revealed that his checking in card said Allen Springs. Also, that he has lived at this address for the last year. Willy-nilly.
Willy-nilly?
Comes and goes. No set schedule. No visible means of support, and that's all I got for you, Danny.
Thank you, Gino. Go buy seeds. The next morning, legwork against squalls of March wind crested with rain. And on brownstone and pavement, the great stains where the chill wet has sunk deep. And a small boy lifting his head to it, taking the slap of it across his face. Legwork now, in a street whispering winter's death, in the furled kites making stick shadows in the novelty shop display, in the face of a girl pressed against an upstairs window, withdrawing behind fall of lace pattern when she sees you looking at her. Neighborhood street for the piecing together of attitudes and emotions and reflections on the life of a man who had lived in this street and who was found dead in the winter weeds of a vacant lot not far away. Try his apartment house, and a neighbor, young woman, pale, drawn, can't give you much time as she is sickly in the morning. George Harvey, dead? Like I feel. What was to know about him? Except my husband said to me, don't bother to talk to him, Celia. Don't give that George Harvey the time of day, and don't accept nothing you hear. I'm telling you for your own good, Celia. And other neighbors, just because they happen to live in the same place with a man now dead, just put in your little book, no comment, mister. No comment, period. Back into the street and try a shop. George Harvey, yes, he traded here. Good customer, paid off bills like clockwork. Not much to talk to, but a good payer, week to week, like clockwork. And another shop.
Hello?
Hello, is Mr. Carson in?
He's in court today, sorry.
Just a minute. But...
You'll have to see Mr. Carson.
I'm from the police, Danny Clover.
The gentleman who was here talking to Bob yesterday.
That's right.
Bob wouldn't want me to send you away, now would he? Come in.
Thanks.
I can phone Bob. Try to, anyhow. If he's finished at court, he'll be having a cocktail. I'll call the bar.
Well, maybe you'd better not bother him.
Well, I don't mind. It would be something to do.
Oh?
Well, make up your mind.
A couple of questions.
Sit down.
Thanks. It's about...
Just say something exciting, will you? Remark about me and let me giggle girlishly and wag a finger.
Better see if you can get your husband on the phone, Mrs. Carson.
Just anything. Throw an ashtray through a window and make some noise. And...
Real tough just sitting here, huh?
I thought you were the man from the drugs with the double solitaire deck. My neighbor next door comes in later for double solitaire. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Your father-in-law, Harry Carson, he's in jail under suspicion of murder. You know that, don't you?
Yes, she answered.
On suspicion of murdering George Harvey, do you know why your father-in-law would murder George Harvey?
No, she answered.
Do you know whether your husband knew George Harvey?
No, she answered.
I'll come back.
Wait, please, wait. I'm sorry. Listen.
Yes?
I'm sorry about what's happening. I don't understand it. I'm apart from it. Like everything else in my husband's life. And I'm rude, and I...
What about your father-in-law?
I met him at the marriage 4 years ago. I haven't seen him since. My husband relied on him too much. Not good.
I see.
Stipulation of marriage. On your own 2 feet if you want me, Bob, she said. Me and whatever my contacts can do for your career. Neither one of us mentioned my bank account. We just look at each other and smile and understand. I'm not what you call a beaut, am I?
What else can you tell me?
Of course I'm not. But the smart young lawyer married me. And look what happened.
What?
2 months ago, just call me Bob, big corporation lawyer. My contacts. His brain. Oh, that's the neighbor, the double solitaire. Her name's Mrs. Jackson, and if you nod to her on your way out and smile, you'll be doing a very nice thing.
Oh, come on in, Danny. It's your office. Share it with me.
Thanks. You mind?
Oh, not a bit. Here, sit down.
No.
Teletype came in about half hour ago from Nevada State Police.
Oh?
The fingerprint code we put on the wires yesterday, Harry Carson's, the man with shock. They got a set in Nevada that matches Carson's to the wall.
Carson got a record?
I'd call it a record.
Look,
Easy, boy. Easy, Danny. It's a long, hard life. Yeah, court record. Nevada briefed it for us on the teletype. 1932, 21 years ago, a man, Harry Carson, was acquitted of the sudden death of his wife, Lola Carson.
Go on.
Seems he was cleaning a pistol. Out west, they do that a lot. Harry Carson was cleaning this pistol, and his wife walked in, and it went off, and she dropped down dead. Their kid, Robert, was there. Saw it off. And the peers of Allen Springs, Nevada, pronounced Harry not guilty. 21 years ago, way out west.
Allen Springs.
Mm-hmm. Same place George Harvey, found dead in a vacant lot, got hometown gazettes from. Same man, this George Harvey, who got a payoff of 125 smackers a week. Just for standing on a street corner every Monday around noon.
Dennison,
get... Yeah, I'll get him. Meet you in the interrogation room in about an hour.
Comfortable, Mr. Carson? Cigarette? Your son will be here in a few minutes, Mr. Carson. I want you to read something, Mr. Carson. Go ahead, read it. All right, I'll read it to you. It's a report from our medical examiner. Patient exhibits no discernible organic disturbances. The fact of his having recognized a man in the morgue and having talked there, plus certain reaction tests, lead to the conclusion that the apparent state of shock is assumed. You know what that means, Mr. Carson? It means you're bluffing.
Right in here, Bob. Hi, Danny.
Hi. How are you feeling, Pop? I'll have you out of here tomorrow.
I was just reading Dr. Sinsky's report to your father. There's nothing wrong with it.
Look, what do you fellas want me to do? I've got a wife waiting for me.
She tell you to bring back a couple of decks of cards?
Hey, now.
That pose was in the Sunday supplement, Bob. Very good. Very, very good.
Listen, I'm a busy man. I'm a big
corporation lawyer. We know. Real proud of your son, aren't you, Mr. Carson?
Let's take a word like motive and toy with it for a while, huh?
Motive for what?
The murder of George Harvey.
George Harvey. Now, who
is
George?
Your dad's buddy. He used to give him $125 a week. That's the basis of friendship, if I ever heard one.
You remember George Harvey, don't you, Bob?
Sure he does, Danny. After all, how big is Alum Springs, Nevada? Everybody knows everybody. Roping, steering, chivalries. Those people are folk out there. Everybody knows everybody. Oh, look, Danny, his eyes just lit up. He just said to himself, oh, that George Harvey.
You boys got a formal charge to bring against my father. Now, you just try that, and I'll take it from...
Hello there, Mr. Carson. Glad you're having fun.
Pop, shut up.
Now we can clear it all up, Mr. Carson. We can do what your son said, bring formal charges against you.
How you been, son?
Just don't say anything, Pop.
I ask you how you been.
Now, don't be stupid. You're doing fine.
You going to fix it, son?
As long as you two men are talking, one of you can tell me who killed George Harvey.
Don't be coy. Just one of you raise your hand.
Son, I want to tell you something. Son.
What?
I'm tired.
Said he's tired, Bob.
Let's see what he could be tired about. Paying blackmail to George Harvey? No reason to be tired about that anymore. Harvey's dead.
Just about the time when you could afford to pay more blackmail, Bob. Just about the time you got where you wanted to get. Where your wife wanted you to get. Where your father wanted you to get. Up top. Big man.
Son, you're my pride and joy, only I'm tired.
Listen, Pop.
Another scheme? Tired of those, too.
The blackmail. Mr. Carson paying it to a man who knew a secret. The blackmail ante went up. The man who knew a secret is dead.
Son, you ought to have a good answer for that. You've got a good education. I sure saw you got one.
These guys have got nothing, Pop.
My educated son says you fellas have got nothing.
Then let me just fumble around for a moment, huh? About the secret. About your wife, Mr. Carson.
Tell you men something.
Go ahead.
Silence is a wonderful thing. All this time I've been keeping quiet. All this time I've been faking. Did a lot of good. Most of the time I was left alone. Most of the time I've been thinking.
About your wife, Mr. Carson? How she died? How she was killed?
All sorts of things a man thinks about, especially at my age. A man takes time to think. He can arrange things orderly.
Which one of you killed George Harvey?
How's it going to sound coming out legal talk, son?
You don't know what you're doing.
No, I wouldn't say that. All these years, I guess I knew what I was doing, too. Seeing you got along covering for you, like I figured a dad should do for a son. Especially if he's a bright kid like you. Tell him, son, for the love of heaven, be a man for once. Tell him you killed George Harvey.
Crazy.
How you got me to cover again, convince me you'd work it all out.
Crazy old man.
Maybe I am. When a man's got a 12-year-old boy who shoots his mother, he figures it's just a boy in a terrible accident. He tells himself that, and he believes it, and he tries to cover.
It's out of his mind, you can see that.
Then George comes along, a fellow who knew what happened 21 years ago. Found a way to get some money on account of my son was getting important. Well, I'm tired.
Get a stenographer, Denison.
Yeah.
We'll want to get this all in writing, Mr. Carson.
Sure.
You wrecked it, didn't you, Pop?
I didn't mean to do it, honest, Papa. Here, you take the gun. You make it all right. 21 years ago, and again the other day. And 21 years ago, I didn't even whip you.
Broadway's almost empty now, except for those who never quit. Those who wear peepholes for eyes, the dreamwalkers, the people who want to laugh. They search behind doorways, in alleys, through shuttered windows. They never go home, because they can't. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway. My beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan.
Broadway is My Beat, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 7th of March, 1953 on CBS. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Up next, an episode of True Detective Mysteries, a series that was heard on radio as early as 1937, then made appearances again in the 1940s throughout the later 1950s. This episode from the 1st of January, 1950 on Mutual.
Ladies and gentlemen, $1,000 reward is being offered for information leading to the capture of a dangerous criminal. A complete description will be given later on True Detective Mysteries.
Now, this is John Shuttleworth, editor-in-chief of True Detective Magazine, bringing you the case history of an actual crime. In the years just preceding World War I, a strange series of deaths swept through a little town in a small country in Europe. Before the cause of these deaths had been ascertained, all of the townspeople had been panicked. Most of them had lost friends or relatives, and it was indeed a common belief that a malevolent monster was at large, harking back to the days of Dracula and werewolves. If it had not been for the level-headed police work of Commissioner Rinaldo, there's no telling what might have happened. We pick up the case early one morning in the office of Commissioner Rinaldo as he's reading stacks of letters complaining of the death toll in his town.
Another death has just been reported, Commissioner. We are being deluged by telephone calls and anonymous messages.
Just one moment, Lemay.
While you are speaking of messages, read this letter. It is typical of all the others on my desk.
I do not have to read it.
I can guess what it says. But I do not know what we can do, Commissioner. All of the doctors insist that the deaths were from natural causes. They are honest men. Their reputations are at stake. And there is nothing to refute their statement.
You said another death has been reported. Who is it this time?
Jeanette Clare. She died last night.
Very well. Send for the physician who attended Mademoiselle Clare. I wish to talk to him. Also, investigate the lives of all those who have died during the past 6 weeks. See if you can find any possible connection between their deaths.
You sent for me, Commissioner, and Dr. Godin.
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming so promptly. I wish to discuss the death of Jeanette Clare with you. I understand you were her physician.
I attended Mademoiselle Clare.
Dr. Godin, you told me the other day that all of the recent deaths of the people in this town whom you have attended were from natural causes. Do you still believe that?
Yes, I do. This hysteria that is sweeping through the town is without foundation. Jeanette Clare had a bad case of influenza. There was nothing mysterious about her death, I assure you.
It is difficult to make people believe that, Doctor. They are in the grip of a terrible fear, and they are demanding that the police take some action.
There is nothing for the police to do in these cases.
Perhaps not, but the townspeople believe that there is an inhuman monster in their midst, ready to swoop down upon them at any moment. I was hoping you could help me.
The only suggestion I can offer, Commissioner, is to print an article in the papers that we doctors are all agreed that there is no cause for alarm in the recent death.
You know that has already been done. It has made no impression whatever on the superstitious fear in our town.
There is nothing I can do if people are foolishly superstitious.
But the deaths are too numerous and too sudden. Is there not something unusual about a strong woman like Jeanette Clare dying of influenza after 2 days of illness?
Emphatically not.
But you're right, Doctor. These letters may mean nothing, but in spite of your denial, I am not so sure. As Commissioner of Police, I can no longer ignore the frightened appeals of a terrified populace. I am going to find out whether or not these letters have a basis in fact.
This is John Shuttleworth again, so grimly determined to take care of the people in his town and to discharge his duties as police commissioner successfully, Commissioner Rinaldo began to probe into the darkness of these mysterious depths.
So you not want another cup of tea, Francois?
No, thank you, mademoiselle.
I, too, have no appetite for eating and drinking. These terrible things have happened to our friends.
Please, my sweet, let us not depress Francois and this lovely Michelle with talk of death. After all, they are to be married in a month.
It is all very well for you to talk, my husband, but I do not think we can depress Michelle any more than she has been. After all, she is a nurse. She has attended many of those poor unfortunates. Michelle, do you agree with the doctor? The deaths are due to natural causes.
I am afraid to answer that question, madame.
Michelle, surely you as a scientific nurse should know that...
Francois, I must admit that the patients I have attended had the symptoms of the diseases to which their death was attributed. For instance, I could see nothing unusual about the death of Jeannette Claire. And yet...
And yet what, Michelle?
Francois, I am frightened. It is as if a black terror of olden days has descended upon this little town. Oh, madame, you have been away the whole night.
How is my boy?
Oh, your boy is fine. Tell me, how are the Rosés? I understand that husband and wife were both taken ill. Is that true? Tell me.
Give me my boy, mademoiselle.
Did the Rosés tell you what has happened to them?
Dead. Both of them. The doctor said it was from Guinness.
Oh. Do you believe they must have killed them, Michel? Do you? Do you?
I do not know. Do not ask me. I do not know. Just give me my boy. François, can you hear me? François, calm, you are not sleeping.
Michel, I am ill. I feel very badly.
Here, my darling. Have some of this champagne. It will help you.
No. No, I do not feel like it.
Come, drink it.
No. No, I tell you, I do not want it.
Oh. So you know now, François. Yes, it is I. There is no supernatural force, François. It is I, Michel Thierry. I alone who am responsible for all these lovely deaths. And you, my darling François, are to be even next.
No. No.
Drink. Drink.
Will no one save me?
No one, François. Drink.
Well, Lemaitre. Another death, Commissioner.
Who is it this time?
Mademoiselle Torini.
Torini?
Yes. She died of domain poisoning a few minutes ago.
What? When? What is it?
I don't know. 2 days ago, it was Francois Coquille. This morning, Mademoiselle Torini. She lives with a friend, Madame Boyer, who was also very ill. But the doctors say that Madame Boyer may still live. She's been taken to a hospital.
Come, Lemaitre. There is no time to lose. We must reach Madame Boyer and talk to her. She may be able to help us. In spite of what the doctors say, I am convinced that we are dealing with a mass murderer.
I'm sorry, Commissioner. I cannot let you talk to Madame Boyer. In any event, it would do you no good if I allowed you in the sick room. She's very ill and may not regain consciousness for hours.
Very well, Dr. Goodman. You will, of course, let my office know the moment she is able to talk.
Of course.
Come, Lemaitre. There's nothing more for us to do here.
I do not know what else we can do, Commissioner.
Think. That is what we must do. Somewhere, somehow, there is a connection between all of these things.
There is no connection. All kinds of people have died, old and young, men and women.
Whatever it is that is killing these people, there is no motive behind it, Joe.
Motive? There must be a motive. Just as there must be a method. I will not believe in a supernatural cause for these deaths. We must find some person who has had access to the homes of all these people who have died. Some person who can come and go as he pleases without fear of arousing suspicion.
There is no such person. All of these people were attended by reputable physicians and had the best of care. Why, Mademoiselle Torini died in the arms of Michel Thierry.
Yes, now that you mention this, so she did. And who attended François Coquille in his last illness?
Michel. But she was engaged.
Yes. And who nursed Monsieur and Madame Roset?
Michel again. But surely, Commissioner, you do not think...
Go back to the hospital and... No, no. Check on all the other deaths. See whether Madame Thierry was the nurse. Huh? Then go back to the hospital and wait outside the room of Madame Boyer. I am going to pay a call on Michel Thierry.
Oh, Commissioner, come in, please. I must apologize for the condition of the house, but I have had so little sleep in the past few weeks that I was not...
That is perfectly all right, Madame Thierry. I wish to question you about the many deaths we have had during the past few weeks.
Oh, well, of course, Commissioner, but I do not understand how I
in
could...
In your capacity as nurse, I thought you might throw some light on these deaths. I assure you that anything you tell me will be regarded as strictly confidential.
I understand, Commissioner.
Now, have you noticed anything unusual?
I am... In a peculiar position, Commissioner. A nurse is not supposed to have opinions of her own. She must accept what the doctors tell her. And as you know, the doctors say that the deaths are from natural causes.
I realize your position, madame, but this is a matter beyond mere professional ethics. It is life or death. I think you had better answer my question quite frankly.
Very well. All the sick people I have seen have had the proper symptoms of the diseases to which the doctors attributed their death. In all cases, the symptoms have been different.
Is that all you have to say?
No. I cannot help but feel, no matter what the symptoms, that there is something mysterious going on. A hidden power seems to be at work.
Are you serious about this?
I may feel differently when I have rested. I have not been to bed for 3 nights, and I have scarcely eaten at all. The death of my fiancé was a terrible shock to me.
I had hoped you could throw some light on the death, madame, but if you take the same suspicious approach that the rest of the citizens do, we will get nowhere.
Huh?
What put the idea of the supernatural into your head?
Excuse me, Commissioner, I feel faint. I need some stimulant. I'm too tired to think clearly or to be of any use to you. Here is some wine for you, too.
Thank you. Now, madame, what put the idea of the supernatural into your head?
I do not know the answer to that question.
Feeling as you do, madame, it seems to me that you were very brave to continue nursing the sick or the dying. You are not afraid.
For myself, no. But I have a little 4-year-old son. And if anything happened to him, I would die. However... I cannot refuse to help when sick people send for me. Can I, monsieur?
No. You are very brave.
Are you not going to drink your wine, monsieur?
In a moment.
It is excellent wine, and of a very good vintage.
It has a nice bouquet.
Let us drink together, Commissioner. Let us drink to an end of this horrible day.
I will drink to that with pleasure. I am very sorry. How clumsy of me.
Not at all, monsieur. I will get you another glass.
No, thank you. Do not bother. I have work to do.
I'm sorry that I could not be of more help to you. You look tired, monsieur. I trust that illness will not descend upon you.
Uh-huh.
How is Madame Boyer, Lynette?
Still unconscious, Commissioner.
I left one of my men there while I came back to do some checking.
And what have you found out?
In every case, in every death, the attending nurse has been Michelle Thierry.
Very well. Put detectives on her trail.
Are you sure, Commissioner? She has such a splendid reputation.
Lemaitre, there is no real evidence to connect Madame Thierry with these deaths. But I do not trust her. Have your men report to me the minute she is called in on another case, eh? So far, we have unearthed nothing tangible to suggest that crimes are actually being committed. We must pick up that evidence before any more lives are lost.
Then you do think...
I do not know, I tell you. That is what we must discover. The deaths are becoming more frequent. The killer is becoming bolder. We must work quickly.
As feeling as you do, Commissioner, should we not arrest Michelle? Hold her on some pretext so that she will not be in a position to practice a profession until we know?
It's a terrible situation, the man. A mass murderer is in our midst. We think we may know who she is, but we have no evidence upon which to hold her. No, we can do nothing. Lemaitre, until we get some evidence against Madame Thierry.
This is John Shuttleworth. So Commissioner Rinaldo found himself truly in a terrible dilemma. He believed with all his heart that he had uncovered the person responsible for the wave of deaths which had swept over his little town. But legally, he had no choice but to allow this terrible woman to continue to practice her profession as a nurse, hope that he could avert another tragedy, and at the same time, seek to gather enough evidence to prove her guilt.
Commissioner, Monsieur Thierry has just been sent for. Madame Roulin is ill.
Take two gendarmes. Go to the Roulin home. Contact the servants. Save every glass, cup, or utensil used in giving medicine or nourishment to the sick woman. The minute they give them to you, send them back here to Dr. Zelli. He will be waiting in his laboratory to examine them. Everything must be done with the utmost secrecy, eh? I will meet you, Lemaitre, on the grounds of the Roulin Villa in about an hour.
Instructed, I made friends with the servants.
Any results?
Here is a glass in which Michelle Thierry gave her patient medicine a few moments ago.
Good. How did you get it?
One of the maids took it before it was noticed and slipped it out the back door to me.
Excellent. And how is Madame Roulin?
Much worse. Her condition is fast becoming alarming.
Maybe I'll take the glass to headquarters. You will find Dr. Zelli in the laboratory waiting. Rush the report on his examination back to me and bring Dr. Zelli back here with you. I will be on the grounds at the rear of the house, near the garage. But hurry. Every moment is precious. Make the doctor understand that a life is at stake.
Did get an excess of nerve. I would have sworn I heard someone out there before. Oh, Lord. I let one get older, one hears things. And sees things I have no doubt.
Commissioner, what is it?
Monsieur Roulin, I wish to speak to the nurse at once.
Why?
Because I am frightened for the safety of your daughter-in-law. Where is the nurse?
What do you mean?
Later, later, Monsieur Roulin. I have no time now.
You have no time, Commissioner. No, there is no hurry. My daughter-in-law died a few minutes ago. The nurse is still with her in the room above this.
Where is the doctor?
The doctor is gone, monsieur. There was nothing he could do.
Perhaps not, but there is something I can do, and right now.
My patient has died, monsieur. I must ask you to leave.
And I must insist upon staying.
What? What do you mean, monsieur, by invading the sacred privacy of this room?
You and I will both stay, madame, until Dr. Zelli arrives.
Dr. Zelli? What has he to do with this? He was not the doctor for Madame Roulin?
Of course not. And you know very well who Dr. Zelli is. He is the doctor in the police laboratory.
What have I to do with doctors in police laboratory? Have I not had enough trouble with doctors already without your bringing others to plague me?
You will not be plagued long, madame. If I am not mistaken, here is the doctor now and my assistant, Sergeant Lemaitre. Yes, Lemaitre, do you have news for me?
Yes, Commissioner. The cup that I took to the laboratory had traces of poison in it.
That is all that is necessary. Arrest Michel Thierry.
What? Have you taken leave of your senses, Commissioner?
No, no. Michel Thierry, I charge you with a terrible series of crimes. You are the death-dealing monster of this village. You yourself are the evil force you told me was in this town.
That is not true. I'm a gentle soul and would not hurt anyone. Ask my patients. They love and respect me.
Your patients, madame, are dead.
Well, that is not my fault. I have been a good nurse.
It will do you no good to deny your guilt. The gendarmes have exhumed the bodies of all the people cared for by you who have met death. You were very clever. You only administered poison after you had been called in to tend a sick person whose illness had already been diagnosed by a physician. When the patient died, the doctor, not having been present at the time of death, took your word the patient died of natural causes, the original diagnosis. So you had better confess, and at once.
You cannot make me confess. You cannot.
It is useless to lie. Tell us, madame, why? Why did you murder all these people? What did you gain by it?
I do not know. I do not know why. All these people, I wanted to see them die. Never so afraid. I loved Hans Weber when I was nursing him. I was overcome by the desire to watch him go through the agony of death. It was something I couldn't control. He was so afraid. I wanted to see him as he died. I wanted to watch them all die.
This is John Shuttleworth. So this terrible woman, Michel Thierry, went on trial, and after only an hour's deliberation on the part of the jury, was found guilty. The judge, in sentencing her to death, said, "Michel Thierry, you have been called a monster, but that doesn't half express the truth. I doubt if all history contains another criminal of your caliber." It was with these terrible words ringing in her ears that Michel Thierry went to her death, thus ending one of the most amazing cases in my experience.
Except for the use of fictitious names and places, this was a real story of real crimes solved by real people with a real criminal brought to justice.
But be on the alert. A vicious criminal is at large and may be in your neighborhood. As editor-in-chief of True Detective magazine, I offer $1,000 reward for information leading to the capture of Harry Burton. 1 month from the date of this broadcast, and as a direct result of listening to this broadcast. In just a moment, I'll bring you the details, but first...
Hold the phone! Hold the phone! Happy New Year, wherever you are, from America's tastiest candy bar.
Yes, the makers of O. Henry candy bars, and all of us here on True Detective Mysteries, hope you'll enjoy the happiest New Year ever. Good luck to all, from real eating fun. That's O. Henry, public energy number one.
Details regarding the wanted criminal. Harry Burton is wanted for questioning in connection with the brutal murder of Robert Crane, committed during an armed robbery in Los Angeles, California, on October 1st, 1947. It is alleged that Burton, posing as a messenger, entered a private home and proceeded to rob the members of the household. Robert Crane, a guest, was shot and killed when he did not immediately obey the robber's orders. The murderer then left the house and is still at large. Harry Burton, true name Halliburton, is 44 years of age, 5 feet 10 inches in height, weighs about 175 pounds. He has brown hair and gray eyes. The fugitive has the following marks of identification. His face is covered with burns resembling small pox marks caused by the explosion of a piece of metal when he was working as a welder. Burton is armed and dangerous. If located, notify Chief of Police, Police Department, Los Angeles, California. On no account, call your local radio station, but notify Chief of Police, Police Department, Los Angeles, California. Then get in touch with John Shuttleworth for the $1,000 reward.
Be sure to listen next week when O. Henry, America's famous candy bar, again brings you John Shuttleworth with another thrilling dramatization of an actual crime case. Adapted from the pages of True Detective Magazine. Read True Detective Magazine, now on the newsstands for your enjoyment. True Detective Mysteries are dramatized by A. Burnett and directed by Murray Burnett.
True Detective Mysteries on Tuned to Yesterday from January 1st, 1950 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Wrapping up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.